Welcome to episode 277 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There will actually be a couple of links on today's show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Links?
Why do I put it that way? Because this is a celebration of Phil's 100th episode.
Yeah, what did you link?
We got pictures of you, man.
Just oh, there. No. How'd you do that?
No, that's not it. That's not it. Announcement before I forget.
Oh, okay.
Announcement. I'm trying to say the word announcement without going.
There's going to be an intro and outro. It's going to be quick.
No episode next week, Labor Day.
Oh, hi.
But
yes.
We will be back on the 17th of September, 2020.
Good or bad.
And now, Phil's fault.
Well,
because it's Phil's celebration, his thing, his show.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
For this episode. And most of it happened mostly on Monday. I have no plans for this episode. I feel funny about that.
Was the original idea for Mondays, right?
That there would be no plan, that we'd just sort of fish around until we found out what this week's episode would be about?
Yeah.
Yes.
I secretly believe that you don't. Yeah, you're lying to me. There is some loose plan, some fallback. Some...
Right now?
Yeah, yeah.
No. Well, yes.
Just in case. You know.
This is your 100th episode.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
There's math involved here. You actually started, you first showed up on the show, episode 177.
Yes.
Which was the one-year anniversary, so that doesn't really count.
I was a guest anyways.
Yes, and yes. And then you became a host, temporary host, 178.
Uh-huh.
And then you weren't there for, it was either 190 or 191, I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise your 100th episode would have been the last one.
Uh-huh, okay.
It all makes sense.
Now it's today.
Now, see, that's all I had planned. Now, what are we going to talk about?
100th episode. So it should be up to me, right?
Yes.
I should take charge. Mm-hmm. Should have some stuff here.
You don't have about, anything. I can tell already.
I don't, well, I don't know if I should even mention it, but I was watching a documentary.
Okay.
And they were talking about the frequency count of the first digit of numbers. It's called Benford's Law. And it's basically in a normal data set, a typical data set.
I can tell I hate this already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. the frequency of lower numbers is greater than the frequency of higher numbers. And there's this sort of curve and all sorts of math around it.
Right.
Benfordness. Yeah.
Does that have anything to do with the central limit theorem?
It doesn't sound like it. They also go with the first digit theory. The thing that was neat about it was they kept applying it around the world, and they're like, oh, look, it kind of fits.
It kind of barely fits. Well, you can do the same thing with the bell curve, right?
I know.
The Gaussian distribution.
If I ignore this bit here and hammer this bit down...
I can tell this is a measurement error because it's messing up my data.
The most notable example is there's a guy, he's a digital forensic analyst.
That's a thing.
And he would use Benford's Law to check JPEGs and see if they were...
see if there's any sort of hidden info.
Yeah, he would just sort of flag them if they didn't fall into the Benfordness, and then he would look deeper. Huh. So... You know,
as a quick first filter?
Yeah, yeah. That made sense to me, you know? Something squirrely here. The data is not quite the way it should ought to be.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. I do not know much about compression. But one day when I was reading up on it,
yeah.
Data compression I'm talking about here. Audio compression. I also don't know much about that, but never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I came up with a trick.
Oh, yeah.
That, but it would not... It would work great on text files.
Okay. Which arguably are some of the smallest files you have. Well, not you.
Well, no, I write a lot. But I don't know how it would work with a image file or a video file. I don't know what those numbers are like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was talking about JPEGs in particular. They're kind of a raster. Like every little, it's divided into little squares, and every square has its own value. And,
right, so it's one of the bitmap versions.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I do know a little bit about it. Well, I did some animations and graphics, and you bump into this crap along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking I might tell a couple of the stories that never fit into the show.
Well, there we go.
So, what's his name? Guglielmo Marconi managed to send messages across the Atlantic.
Congratulations.
Now, there was a whole bunch of patent fights between him and Nikola Tesla and Thomas Alva Edison.
Is that the three that were talking over each other?
This is the very story I'm speaking. All three of them had contracted to send the race results from London, you know, somewhere else, across the Atlantic.
Yes.
Right. So they did.
Yes.
But because three different transmitters all using that spark crap transmitter. And the thing about the spark crap transmitters is that they're noisy and cover all sorts of frequencies. So they were talking all over each other and nobody got the information across at all. I hear rumors that next year, AT&T built such a big transmitter that no one else could even compete. Just going to stomp all over them.
So this is the game, huh? Bigger and transmitters. Yes.
And we get back up to the steam engine. Our good old friend Watt.
Yeah.
One of his biggest technical challenges was trying to keep a seal between the cylinder and the piston and still have the piston move.
Oh, right.
Right. And he had originally worked with a guy named Rohrbach, who had bought out Watt's patents.
Okay.
But Rohrbach didn't know what he was doing. He didn't quite have the connections or other experts that Watt needed to turn this into a practical engine. So Rohrbach's patents, which were once Watt's patents, became Bolton's patents. And Bolton was he was super into industrialization.
Okay.
But he wasn't one of these guys who's like, I can't wait to have a whole pool of children working for me.
Yeah. He's not a jerk.
He had a somewhat idealistic vision of industrialization where there'd be this big open plan warehouse all the greatest craftsmen of the day could come together and build products.
That's right.
And so he had been doing that for a while before he got a hold of James Watt.
Mm-hmm.
So when James Watt had a little trouble with piston and cylinder manufacture, Bolton hooks him up with the best iron worker in England, who had just come up with a new way of boring cannon. And I don't mean making cannon feel like, oh, God, this is dull. Boring out cannons. Mm-hmm. So then, it's just the little details involved in history that all fit together like this weird puzzle.
And who doesn't want a workshop filled with the best and brightest in their little fields?
That'd be awesome.
I know.
I'd feel pressure to come up with some decent project for them
work
on.
They're all sitting around idle. They're going to get bored. They're going to leave. Today we're going to make a giant letter M. What? And it has to move.
For reasons. Don't ask questions.
This has nothing to do with science, but it was in my art history class. Some, I think he's dead, some big time artist said, you know, if you're not good at art, make it really, really big.
And red.
Yes. That doesn't work. Red.
You guys made a giant pair of red sunglasses.
Yeah. Well, conceptually, you know, we were supposed to fill the inner field of this, all the different buildings, big grass field, people sit around.
Who do you get to actually make the giant pair of glasses?
Well, it would be nice if we had the world's best iron worker.
And then just let it rust. It'll turn red, right?
Yeah. And I want those lenses to be the type that tint with the sun. You know what I mean?
Ooh, actually,
transition lenses. That's what they're called.
Neat.
Yeah. See, it would be neat. And the glasses would be upside down so that the trailing... what do you call those that go over your ears?
The hooks, I guess. Oh, the ear hooks.
Sure.
Arms.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about, but okay. Anyways, so that you could sit on those, they would be benches.
And the bridge of the nose.
Oh yeah. Wait, and you can't stop anybody from climbing on it. But my first thought was a giant.
If you make giant anything, you're just gonna have to accept that someone's gonna climb on it. It's just gonna happen.
My first thought was a giant merry-go-round. And I saw issues. Drunken college student.
Just an adult-sized one. Right? Oh. Scale it up a bit.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be fun. Very grown-ass men hanging off the end going, oh my God! Megan Star!
There's the Gravitron. That's kind of like, that's the adult size merry-go-round.
Yeah, except we cheat and use a motor. But you don't have... oh, there's one. Locomotives.
Oh, hey.
The actual engine of trains. I guess trains had been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you got smooth rails and wheels designed to run along them, one horse can tow dozens of carts.
Oh.
Instead of just one.
The downhill is kind of rough.
Well, that's where you got somebody on the back end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With the brake lever.
Mm-hmm.
But there were these mine carts
also
on rails, and they used a chain or a rope that ran along pulleys, and you'd hook into the rope, and the mine cart would be hauled. And then when you were done with it, you'd hook it on the other rope, go the other direction. It was being turned by a horse. Generally speaking, who just sort of walked around in circles.
What a boring
like
job.
Like Conan the Barbarian. It was not exactly intellectually stimulating.
No.
But this one railroad was thinking they were going to go with a system like that.
Uh-huh.
And then some people said, oh, no, let's use an actual steam-powered locomotive, an iron horse, wave of the future. Let's go.
Oh, yeah.
So they had a contest.
That's the way to do it.
There were like three or four different people who came in with their locomotive design.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the rules. It included, you know, you will, what did they say? The load of the fuel will be part of the weight.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And, you know, they're trying to keep it an even design or an even contest.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go back and forth along this mile-long track to simulate the distance they would otherwise be traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that won was the only one that didn't break down before the end of the But it also got the highest speed of 92 miles an hour.
Oh. Ooh.
Which, at the time, just this is the fastest any human had ever gone.
Yeah, the wildlife is in for it. 92 miles an hour. No.
I wonder if this is before they made the cow catcher.
Oh. Right, was there a casualty first? And then they're
kind of,
like, oh.
I imagine so. Because it's the kind of thing you just wouldn't necessarily think of if you're a maker of steam locomotives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about when a cow's on the tracks?
Yeah, and if the cow gets underneath, derail, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first derail was caused by...
Oh, moo! Oh, moo!
Poor Bessie.
We named the next locomotive after her.
We better put something on the front of this thing. Those contests, man. Like, I remember science class, the drop the egg thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they keep cropping up. But I wonder if any of them... Like, is there anybody looking at the contest and going... looking for new and unique solutions for
fifth
graders.
Well, there was the X Prize thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that was in fifth graders, though.
Well, that was open. Right, schools could compete.
Yeah. And it was funny. The reward, it was like $1 million or something.
Ooh.
Compared for the ante for aerospace, that's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Good job.
No, it's like, please give me $1 million so that I can pay my staff next month.
I know.
Because I am out of money.
Here's your contest thing. I won.
My house is gone. The car is gone. My wife is gone. My dog doesn't even like me, but I won.
Look at my blue ribbon. What am I going to do with this? But I made it.
Paddle wheels.
Yeah.
There's one that existed since antiquity.
The ones on the backside of steam boats?
It actually, sometimes they were rear-mounted.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they were side-mounted.
Oh, actually, yeah, yeah.
And if you had the right kind of clutch, the side-mounted could go in opposite directions at the same time. Made the boat very maneuverable. The downside being, hey, geez, it takes up a hell of a lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to dock that way. But the paddle wheels had been around long before steam power. Even on the Mississippi, they used to have a paddle wheel.
Mm.
Again, powered by a horse in the boat on a treadmill.
These horses can't. Yeah.
There's a reason Watt went with the measurement horsepower.
Beasts of burden. And it's not burden on us. Those poor things. Well, they don't
care.
But
yeah, I mean, their descriptions of paddle wheel vehicles going all the way back to the Roman Empire.
Wow.
I don't think they ever got all that popular, but there they were.
Whatever. Yeah. Human power versus horses on ships.
Oh, yeah. Like... actually, a lot of ships. Sweeps, which apparently is a word meaning very long oars.
Yeah, yeah.
But you hold whole galleons and banks of oarsmen and sails for when the wind just happened to be blowing the right direction.
What are they called? Those longboats. They were raiders, Vikings.
Yes. Well, they called them longboats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And raiders and Vikings.
They had sweeps. That was actually my whole point.
But yeah, I mean, the turtle, we talked about that. That was actually crank powered by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first vehicles to use a propeller during time of war. Took the propeller forever to catch on. I can't remember the guy's name.
Okay.
But he was trying to get the British Royal Navy interested in propellers.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd made a couple of wooden ones based on the by then 1,000-year-old design of Archimedes, the Archimedes screw. Well, one day, they were tooling along when there was a very loud noise.
Yeah.
And suddenly they leapt forward. Suddenly they were going much faster with the same amount of steam built up.
Well, this is great.
Turned out the propeller broke in just such a way as to make it better.
Why weren't we doing that from the first place? that's how you do it. There's a very famous Korean general. Speaking of turtle ships, I don't remember what they're called in Korean, but basically they were described as turtle ships.
His didn't go underwater.
No. But their deal was that they were covered over. They were armored all the way across the whole boat. And I think they were bigger as well. But they did terrible things to the Japanese. I can't remember if... Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Japanese were invading. That's what they do.
Maybe the Chinese.
Yeah. But yeah, he kept breaking the backs of these ships and they couldn't do anything about it. And yeah, he's got a statue up. But I have no idea about how that thing was propelled. I'm betting money on sweeps.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And possibly some
sails. Or oarsmen,
sails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's covered over. It's a turtle, right?
Yeah, where do you put the sails?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's got to be sweeps. Or maybe a horse in the belly.
I was hoping for like a question, something I could look up for the rest of the week.
Oh. Well.
Benford's Law.
Yeah.
I got curious.
Oh, right, right.
So I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The law states that in naturally occurring collections of data.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers tend to start with low value digits.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, they got specific percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Like number one is 30.1%.
Mm-hmm.
You see number two, 17.6% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. There's a curve. There's like a reverse exponential sort of
curve. Well, it ain't anywhere near exponential. I don't know. I'd have to see the curve and also no math.
No math.
No math. That's what I want for a T-shirt. It's like N-O on one side and K-N-O on the...
Oh, nice. I hear it actually works really good with accounting type stuff where everything's supposed to add up.
Yeah. What I hear here is that anything that can be described with a power law or something that grows or decays exponentially, and that's totally true of finance. It's fractional exponents. But, you know, 10% one year and 10% the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Compound interest. It's built in to be logarithmic like that. So it's not surprising that. Also, it needs to span many, many orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
So, like, if you got a data set between 0 and 9, that's not going to help you. You need 0 to 10 to 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 orders of magnitude, you know.
So, more data.
More data, better.
Okay.
Better, data, better.
And, better.
The links, I have a link to a YouTube video where a guy gives a mathematical explanation of why this happens. And then there's immediately after that in the same playlist a video refuting his explanation.
Science.
Oh, these are amateurs, but still. There's also a link to a way to use it in Excel to detect financial fraud.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know. Hoaxsters, take note. Con men, matchmen, whatever you call yourselves these days, you need to be statistically realistic when you fake the books.
Yeah. You know. test your own data.
Right, yeah. But math, no. Programming, yes. So I took one of the sequences they said should do this, the Fibonacci sequence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was only able to test the first 10,000 numbers.
Uh-oh, is that all?
But yeah, as predicted, the closer you get, or the more numbers you throw in there, the closer you get to Benford's numbers.
Yeah.
But I was only actually checking the frequency of 1 and 2 showing up as the first numbers, not the whole thing. Anyway, we're pretty much done with this episode, so we'll see you next time.
Bye.
I didn't cue you right.
I know.
See you then.
Bye.